This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
When is the last time you burnt yourself on the oven? Or the stove? Or the grill? A burn like that. You remember it? You probably don't remember the exact date, let's be honest. Our minds don't work that way. But I bet you what you do remember is, at least for the next time or two after you burnt yourself, aren't you a little more careful around the oven? Of course, then you forget about it, like I do too. And then you go, you'll burn yourself again in the air, and you'll be like, ah, ooh. And then the next couple times, you're a lot more ginger when you're setting something in. The human mind is conditioned over time. It is conditioned over time to fear certain things, to love certain things, to hate certain things. And our bad experiences, all of them, whatever the case may be, our bad experiences, our mind makes adjustments to try to avoid those experiences ever again. How many different ways have you seen this in your life? Maybe it's with women. Maybe it's with men. I knew a guy. He had a bad drinking problem. He used to scream at me. Now you won't date anybody who has a drink. Manifests itself in all kinds of good ways, bad ways. It's just ugly, right? Hang on to that for a moment. I want you to imagine something. Picture this for me. I want you to imagine it's World War II era, only there's no invasion of Russia, there's no Holocaust. There's no Italian campaign. There's just this country called Germany, bit of a wing nut dude in charge of it, gets a little full of himself, invades Poland, takes Poland, and then turns around and invades France and gets the crap kicked out of him. Kicked out of office, probably imprisoned somewhere. Germany gets a new government, life goes on. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why would I imagine such a thing? Well, here's why you should imagine such a thing. Because right before the Nazi invasion of France, that was the likely scenario. Hitler's own general staff, if you had asked them, in fact, they were screaming about it. Before, if you had asked them what was going to be the result of the German invasion of France, they would have told you to a man, we are going to get crushed. This is going to end our nation. And think about the people who would be alive today if that had happened. If you want to just make it about lives, forget the property, which it's got. I don't even know if you can put a number on that much property. But think about the lives that would still be walking the earth this day. The Holocaust alone, I'm almost positive, Jewish producer Chris, you may know this, I'm pretty sure there are still fewer Jews alive today than there were pre-Holocaust. I think they killed so many of them by a million or so. Yeah, that's right. Setting aside the Jews, Russians, 25 million dead Russians. Now, imagine all their kids. And now, since we're so far later, their kids' kids. How many more people are walking the earth? 100 million? 200 million? It's a lot. Now, none of that had to happen. And I'm about to go into the reasons why. And I'm not big on disclaimers. In fact, as you know, I pretty much hate disclaimers most of the time. Why? Because it seems like everybody on our side, not everybody, that's not fair, too many people on our side are constantly playing defense with things that they shouldn't even pay any attention to. Racism is a great example of that for people on the right. The left, it's their narrative, right? People on the right are racist. The GOP's racist. Trump's fans are Nazis. The GOP's Nazis. Republicans are Nazis. Nazi, 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 Nazi. You know, you've heard it all. You go into black communities that vote overwhelmingly 90% Democrat. They have been told that their whole lives too. They watch the news. They watch CNN. Republicans are Nazis. Civil rights leaders, Republicans are racist. Republicans are Nazis. So it's everywhere. It's all over the media. Well, that's just kind of the way it is. Republicans are Nazis. Republicans are racist. And what do you see as a result from that? You see all these GOP pundits and politicians putting in policies and saying things as if they have to prove they're not. Well, you remember that Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia. Look, by all accounts, it looks like murder, maybe manslaughter, a horrible shoot. I'm not defending it all, but immediately, every Republican pundit and politician comes out. This is a modern-day lynching. This is racism. I can't believe we still have this racism. It's racism. There's not even, to this point, it may come out, but to this point, there's not even a tiny indication it was in any way race-based. Not even a little. But you feel like you have to constantly defend against this image somebody's made for you. Don't defend yourself against things that aren't true. You can call me a racist all day long. I'm not going to defend myself. I'm just going to ignore you. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Your opinion is unimportant to me. Your opinion's not important to me for me to defend myself against things that aren't true. So I hate qualifiers. I hear them all the time. Dude, just have an opinion. Just talk about something. Well, I understand this might not be my place. Oh, my goodness, dude, speak. You'll hear I have guests on now and then like that. You know what you won't hear? Them coming on a second time. I actually had a guest on one time. I asked this person a question. This was a long time ago, so don't bother listening. I asked this person a question, and this person said back to me, I kid you not, and I quote, "I don't know, what do you think?" I'm not making that up. I cut off the interview immediately. The person's never been back on. I'm not doing that to you. Have an opinion. I don't care if it's one I disagree with. Speak. So that was a very, very, very long way of saying this. I was accused yesterday of being a bit of a Napoleon fanboy. And I'm kind of guilty. Yes, I understand there were lots of people died. I get that. But one, I didn't know any of those people. And two, it's not that I'm a Napoleon fanboy. I admire greatness. And by any measure, military, the man was spectacular. I admire greatness. I study it as much as I possibly can. I also am not one of these people who has ever been under the impression that great men who do great things are good men. In fact, I accept automatically they are almost undoubtedly bad men. Ah, did you hear about Michael Jordan? You love his documentary. Did you hear he was you know, a huge philanderer? Yeah, I expected as much. And if you think that your favorite sports star isn't, brother, I've got some news for you. Hang on. We need to talk about Boomer Naturals. You see, it's got a funny name, but it's got the best stuff in the world. And look, they call it that because it's specifically for the baby boomer generation, although they have something for everybody. And they call it that because they use natural products. And doesn't that matter to you at this time? I can't believe all the good stuff I've found on Boomer Naturals. I don't like putting a bunch of man-made chemicals in my body. I don't. Plus, they have face masks, good ones, face masks that give you 92.2% antibacterial protection. That is incredible. And they don't have any of this one-size-fits-all garbage. They have good ones for adults and kids, meaning your kid doesn't have to wear an entire face covering. Go to BoomerNaturals.com, use the promo code Jesse20, you get 20% off. BoomerNaturals.com. Okay, a bit of a Napoleon lover. I was accused of being after yesterday. You don't want to miss yesterday's show. So, I will admit, when I was doing some reading for today, and I've always thought this way about this, I was thinking to myself, man, 2 days in a row, I'm going to be accused of being some kind of French lover. Because I am about to defend the nation of France. Don't scoff. I see what you're doing. I love all the French white flag jokes, too. I love all the French people are weak, too. But France going down at the Battle of France, you know, when Germany invaded France, and going down relatively easily, it's thought to be one of, if not the biggest, military disasters ever. And one of the biggest blunders ever, and how weak and pathetic it is, and the French people were throwing down their arms. And I'm about to give you the real skinny on what happened, but first, let us rewind just a little bit. Because you cannot possibly understand what happened at the Battle of France without talking about World War I. Now, I need you to picture something for me first. I want you to picture 40% of the American male population having gone through a living hell war that you can't even imagine. That was France post-World War I. As I have explained to you several times, I will say it till the end of my days. I certainly could be wrong because I can't be there. But if you had to put me in one combat situation that I would say is the worst in the history of mankind, and I mean spears and shields and shoving a spear through someone's neck and getting one shoved through yours, that kind of horrifying fear, being on the Western Front in World War I in the trenches is, in my opinion, the worst wartime experience anyone has ever gone through, ever. Ever. An experience of being gassed to death and way almost worse than that, the artillery, because they didn't quite know how to use it yet, so they would just drop endless shells. Even if you didn't die, we have, and I've told you before to look it up, feel free to do it while I speak, there are YouTube videos out there of guys who got a bunch of shells around them in World War I, got shelled a bunch, didn't get hit, and you see them post-war trying to get treatment. They can hardly walk. It's like their joints don't work. We're talking a war that was so damaging, it would break you without a round hitting you. Horrifying. Horrifying loss of life. We lost 55,000 people in Vietnam. The British lost 55,000 people in about 4 hours at the Battle of the Somme. Carnage like you can't believe. Machine guns, they didn't know what they were doing. Waves. In France, contrary to what you and I like to believe and make fun of them for, brother, France took that war on the chin. From beginning to end, France was involved in it. France was in the meat grinder of it. France lost more men by a mile than any other nation on earth. France lost 1.7 million people in World War I. I'm almost positive the United States of America has not lost 1.7 million people in all of our wars combined, period. I'm almost positive of that. I think 600,000 Civil War, 400,000 World War II, add everybody else. I bet you it's a close number. Chris, look that up, but it's close. France was knee-deep in that slaughter. You know the Americans, us, we were involved in World War I in combat for about 9 months. Now, we look at everything through the view of America, and that's fine. That's good. We should be patriots, but France was there 1914 to the end of it, baby. Taking that German juggernaut of an army, some people say the greatest army of all time, and going blow for blow with them. And over 2% of France's population died. Over 2%. Put that into frame of reference for you here. That would be like the United States of America going to war today. A big one. 4 years later, us losing 12 million people. What do you think our society would be like if we sent off 12 million people to their deaths? And oh, did I mention? The people who didn't die, but came back. Remember that YouTube video I told you back about? Mentally shattered, physically shattered, especially because of the artillery. There were so many gruesome, but non-fatal injuries. You're welcome to go look that up, too. There are plenty of pictures online. I wouldn't recommend doing that around a meal. And France stood there toe-to-toe with Germany. And prior to that, the reason I sound like a French defender is we just talked about Napoleon yesterday when they were beating the living crap out of everybody. France has a long history, but militarily, until World War II, France didn't have anything to be ashamed of, Jack. Not a daggone thing. Again, I'm not some French defender, but not a daggone thing. Remember this. More Brits and French and Italians died in World War I than World War II. The reason you think of World War II on the grand scale you think of it is three reasons. One, the Holocaust. Two, we were actually attacked on our soil. And three, the Russian campaign, which skewed all the numbers way, way out of whack. World War I was, by many accounts, the greater conflict, in my opinion. An ugly, ugly affair. And France, buddy, France was a baller during that war. And here's what happened in World War I before we get up to the Battle of France for World War II. Now, this is going to be important, and I try not to bore you with mind-numbing details and geography stuff. You know I don't do that. I don't bore you with a million names. It's not because the names aren't important. You should learn the names if that's your thing. But they get lost. It's always driven me crazy when somebody tells me a story. Did you know General MacArthur? He was right there with his First Army Corps, General Johnson, and he was working with General Ironside of the Britain side, and General. Okay, I'm already confused. General who? What? Who was with? I don't do it. Maybe that's your thing. I don't do it. But this part is going to be important for you to learn, so pay attention. I need you to picture Germany. I need you to picture France. Germany is on the right as you look at the map. France is on the left as you look at the map. You with me so far? Pretty easy, right? Germany in the east, France in the west. That's where we go. Germany and France right next to each other. And at the very top in between them, the very top, there's this little place called Belgium and Luxembourg, but we're going to focus on Belgium for our purposes. Hang on one sec. France on the left, Germany on the right, Belgium up there in between them at the very tippy top. Now, understand, they're a little cattywampus, to put it weirdly. France is a little lower than Germany, what you're looking at right there, but that's not going to matter for our purposes. Let's keep it simple, okay? Now, in World War I, Germany... And this isn't actually a World War I story, but we can't tell our story without telling the World War I one briefly. Germany, they knew they were going to have to take on France and Russia. I'm not going to get into all the reasons. We'll do that another day. And what they needed to do was quickly knock France out of the war. Well, France had a bunch of troops along that French-German border. They're not stupid. And up near Belgium, where the, you know, French, it had to go France, then Belgium, then Germany, they didn't really. And Germany had a plan called the Schlieffen Plan, where they were going to storm through Belgium, whether the Belgians would allow them to or not. Belgium actually eventually said, no, you can't. And then Germany said, actually, we can, and then wiped out their entire country for it. And the plan was to storm through Belgium, storm into France, knock out France, then you can turn and face Russia because you don't want to fight a two-front war. That was the Schlieffen Plan. And they attempted it. I don't know whether you'd call it a failure. But I guess you can call it a failure because it did most definitely did not knock out France. But that's where, obviously, France stopped them up there. Once they got onto French soil, and then you began World War I. Now, this part's going to come into play, too, so pay attention. The French people, like anybody with national pride, and sadly, I feel like some people today may not understand such a thing, but especially back in these days, France had a lot of national pride in France, in their nation. And this is important. World War I was not fought in Germany. World War I was fought in France. Those lines, all those trenches, all those things you saw, those were in France. World War I was fought on French soil. That famous battle, Verdun, one of the worst places you could ever be in human history. The Germans actually chose that place specifically because The French loved it so much for its history. It was such a cultural landmark. The Germans specifically chose it because they knew we could just wreck the place and it'll drive the French insane. The French had a lot of pride in France, in the history of France. And there's so much history of France. And that was an ugly bit of business for them. Because all those trenches, all those holes left after those endless artillery shells. Verdun, I just mentioned, at some point, I don't know if there are pictures of this. I've never looked it up. They say Verdun was this thickly forested place at the beginning of the battle. And by the time it was over, there was not a single tree left. I'm not exaggerating. Not a single tree. The artillery had made the place a moonscape. You remember that. That was World War I. So France kicks off World War I, all these bloody battles. Everybody knows the story. Horrible. They finally sign the Treaty of Versailles. We're not going to go into that disaster again. But we move on from World War I, and now this is where things start to get a little lost. The truth, I should say, starts to get a little lost. People are a little confused what happened next. There's this way of thinking that France was just sitting there munching on some croissants while Hitler took power in Germany, pulled Germany from the ashes, and began to secretly build up this military juggernaut, and France and Britain had no idea. I just think they're planting grapes. I don't think they're building tanks. Totally, totally wrong. They knew. They weren't quite sure what they should do about it. They weren't quite sure what he was going to do about it, but they knew. Oh, and there's another way of thinking that France, so mentally scarred and damaged and poor from World War I, they basically gave up being a military at all. They disbanded their army and they all went and made graham crackers. Nope. France was well aware that it had to stay on top of their military technology, of their military ability. They were well aware of what could happen if they didn't. They knew what Germany was doing. France was churning out tanks, churning out planes, churning out one of the best bombers the world has ever seen. Britain, too. Britain was all over this. They were all over making sure they were squared away. And so we get to World War II, or the beginning of World War II. And here's the deal. You and I both do this because we weren't there and we can't put ourselves in the middle of a timeline. We are looking from the lens of 2020. Not the vision, the year. We're looking back and all we see is, the Nazi army, this big, evil thing full of Jew-hating Nazis, and it was also this evil war machine with blood-dripping fangs. Slow down. Adolf Hitler was a Jew-hating Nazi demon. Adolf Hitler surrounded himself. Lots of his people were Jew-hating Nazi demons. Himmler, the rest of them, there's no question. I'm not denying that. Would never deny the atrocities. But understand this, everybody in the German military was not some Jew-hating Nazi demon. In fact, much of the German military, especially the big cheeses, all the generals, they didn't care about Jews. They didn't care about Nazism at all. And in fact, they had 4 years of experience fighting wars in World War I. What I'm trying to tell you is Germany, at the beginning of World War II, at the beginning, was led by studs. Not even Nazis either. Some Nazis in there, sure. but Germany was led by extremely capable generals with worlds and worlds of experience. Now, before we kick off our Battle of France here, remember what we talked about how history has a way of being rewritten? There's that way of thinking that France just turned and ran and laid down and weren't militarily ready. France and Britain, they were combined fighting this fight, had easily more troops than the Germans by a mile. They had more tanks than the Germans by a mile. Oh, and did I mention the tanks they did have were far superior than the German tanks at the beginning of the war? Remember, everything's through a lens of 2020. At the end of the war, Germany had these great, the Generation 4, I'm going to call them Panzers. In the beginning, they had Generation 1 and 2, and they sucked, especially compared to France's. France had tanks that were way better than Germany's. They had fighter pilots that were as good or better than anything Germany had, and they had a lot more of them. And their pilots were way better than Germany's. Hang on a second. Clean Phone Pro. You need one. I know you don't want to have to buy something else, but let me explain something to you. Think about your phone. Maybe it's in your hand, maybe it's in your pocket, maybe it's sitting beside you. Now think about all the places that phone has been. Think about all the places your hands have been, and then you touched your phone, then you talked on your phone, then you set your phone down. I'll tell you personally, my phone is sitting beside me on this countertop. I don't know when the last time this countertop was cleaned. Maybe never. That's not an exaggeration. Your phone has more germs on it on average than a public restroom. You need a Clean Phone Pro because it uses UVC lights to completely disinfect your phone. Now, go to AmericaFirstShop.com and get a Clean Phone Pro, and don't forget to use the code Jesse at checkout. You get free 2-day FedEx shipping. AmericaFirstShop.com. Now remember, I'm not exaggerating. I know you may have even gone and looked it up because you've been told, right? You've been told time and time again. Germany, this military juggernaut at the beginning of World War II, went storming through those pasty French who weren't even close to being. I know, don't look. I ain't mad at you. That's what I was taught my whole life. Yeah, it's completely false. France and Britain combined. Shoot, France alone. But definitely France and Britain combined, because they were combined right now, had by far more troops, more planes, more tanks, better tanks, a superior navy by a mile. Not only that, they had all the supplies because of the British Navy, so they could just sit and siege Germany and lock them down and strangle them to death, kind of the same way they did in World War I. Germany, when they invaded Poland, again, because we look at everything through you know, our lens, we're all like, oh, man, that was the beginning of Germany storming through Europe. They invaded Poland, and Hitler did not think Britain would actually declare war. He was despondent when he found out they did, and his generals told him, we are done. This is it for us. We are in no way ready to take on Britain and France. They weren't even considering America or Russia at this time. Germany, after they invaded Poland, was in a horrible military situation. They were toast. On top of that, Hitler now decides that he wants to invade France. His general staff freaked out. We have all their memoirs after the fact, and I mean to a man, they were all, I'm sorry, what? Invade France? Did you say invade France? We can't invade France. They're going to beat the crap out of us. On top of the fact France had the Maginot Line, let us go back to the map that we talked about earlier. Remember, you got Germany on the right. You got France on the left. You got Belgium up there on the top in between them. Remember before in World War I when Germany went storming through Belgium? You remember the reason they went storming through Belgium at the top instead of just crossing over the border? Because the French had a strong border. Yeah, that strong border from World War I got a lot stronger. They built one of the military wonders of the world. It was called the Maginot Line, and I've never seen it. I don't know how much of it still exists. If you know something about it or you've seen it and it's awesome, email me now, jesse@jessekellyshow.com, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So I've never seen it. I don't know if it still exists, but it was essentially this. A long, 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 long line of forts. Only because of artillery and the advances in technology, it wasn't forts like you and I think of forts, you know, big walls and stuff. They were underground, and the forts had artillery weapons that would rise and fall and machine gun pillboxes that were built into the ground, and this entire thing's underground, and it's all interconnected. So there's a kitchen and a field hospital, and it has a railway that connects all the forts. It just sounds like something I would geek out on, and my wife would roll her eyes the entire time we were going through it. It sounds incredible. And Germany knew there was this Maginot Line there. Like I said, it got stronger. And France had reserves behind the Maginot Line. Part of any defense is you keep people in reserves behind it because inevitably the defense is going to fail someplace you can't foresee. Reserves run up, reinforce it, you're good to go. So Germany's all, oh gosh, well, we can't invade there. Just the same reason we couldn't invade there before. We can't do it, right? We can't do it. Well, what are we going to do? Let's go through Belgium again. A lot of them were telling Hitler, let's go through Belgium again. And Hitler, to his credit, for all the military blunders he made, they used to scoff at him. His generals would scoff at him behind his back and call him the corporal. Because that's what he was in World War I. You have all these people, all these generals there. And remember, Germany had amazing generals, especially in World War I, but they had plenty in World War II too. And these guys were, look, they just knew how to do military then. They knew how to train their generals. And these were guys who'd spent a career on tactics and logistics and stuff like that. And Hitler would come in and be like, no, we're not doing that. And they would look at him like, oh, gosh, this guy is an idiot. He's going to get us all killed. But to his credit, when he told them come up with a plan to invade France, and they all brought him their plans, everybody, almost to a man, brought him virtually the same plan they'd used in World War I. We can't cross that Maginot Line. Let's go through Belgium. We'll blow them out through there. Try to storm through France. Let's do the best we can. And again, I can't stress this enough. They were supposed to lose this battle. By any account, if you look at this on paper and even strategically, you can war game it all day long, and they did. They were supposed to lose this. This was a stupid decision on Hitler's part. Suicidal. Until, well, it generally only takes one brilliant mind. And there was a guy who had a plan. Hang on, I'll tell you that plan. Hate that feeling. You know the feeling when you lay down at night and you've had a long day and you're tired and it's time to finally put your feet up, get under the covers and relax and go to sleep, and then your mind starts going nuts. It happens to me all the time. You think about the day you just had. I think about my show I've got to do the next morning. I think about the wife, kids, depression, pandemic, whatever the case may be, your mind starts going and then you start getting frantic. And then it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And soon you know for a fact, man, tomorrow's going to suck because I'm not going to be me. There's a new solution out there, a drug-free solution out there. It's called EbSleep. You put it on your head. It applies precise, continuous cooling to your forehead, putting you to sleep and keeping you asleep. Go to tryeb.com/Jesse. Use the code Jesse at checkout. You get $25 off. Hopefully I never start off another sentence like this, but again, Hitler, to his credit, he rejected all those plans that involved storming through Belgium again. He rejected them. They brought him. The big shot generals that knew it all brought him several plans like that, and he said, that is just like the Schlieffen plan. They're going to see that coming. Give me something new. Give me something else. And they didn't know what else to give him. They didn't. What do we do here? We can't go the Maginot Line, and Hitler doesn't want us to go through Belgium. What in the world are we going to do? Until one man comes up with a plan. Now, remember that picture of Germany, France, and Belgium? Well, here's the thing. The Maginot Line is running north and south. You have Belgium up there running east and west. Again, that's very simplified, but I'm making this as easy as possible because I know you're not staring at a map. There is, however, a gap in between that Maginot Line and Belgium. A gap where there are only some really light French troops, kind of the worst troops they had. That's where they stashed them. Now, I know what you're thinking. Jesse, how could France be so stupid as to stash their worst troops there? This is why they lost. It's understandable why they stashed their worst troops there. I will explain in just a second.
The Jesse Kelly Show. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Remember, you got Belgium up top, you got the heavily defended Maginot Line on the other side. But right in between, you have the Ardennes Forest. Now, the Ardennes Forest was nasty. As you can imagine, there are trees, lots of them, hills, borderline mountains, and rivers. Now, not to geek out on military stuff too much for you here, but rivers are a major, major, major problem in military campaigns. It's something they will scout out ahead of time long before movements because you have to figure out a way across rivers. If there are only a few ways in place across rivers, you have to assume anybody with half a brain defensively is going to blow those bridges. It's a big deal. And if they do blow the bridges, guess what? You got to have a plan for that too. You got all these tanks, you got all these men, you got all these trucks, you got all these things. They can't just hover across the river. They have to take a bridge, either the one that's there or one you build fast. I'm not going to go off on this now because I can talk about this guy all day long, but one of my favorite stories ever is Julius Caesar going up to the Rhine River because he was mad at the Germans and wanted to go slap them around. And using ancient Roman technology from before Christ, builds a bridge across the Rhine River in 9 days. There aren't many things that sound that boring that I would love to go back and see. I just want to go back and see how that is even humanly possible. 9 days. Then he crosses the river, goes and beats up a bunch of Germans, goes back across the river, and destroys the bridge as a way of saying, screw you, I can come back and do this whenever I feel like. This wasn't something special. This was a Saturday afternoon for me. Peace. That's awesome. That's awesome. But either way, bridges are important. And Germany figures out what they're going to do, and here's the plan. You see, France, they're mad at Germany. They know Germany's probably coming. And what does France do? Instead of putting more men on the Maginot Line, you don't need them there, they stack all of their men and equipment and top-tier troops up in Belgium. And they put them in Belgium, I should say, because, again, remember what we talked about earlier, how World War I was fought in France, and there was still so much battle scarring there. They didn't want that ever again. No, please, never again. Not on French soil. So they put all their shock troops, all those amazing tanks I told you about, everything up into Belgium. They've got the Maginot Line. We're good to go. These Germans are screwed. Except the Germans were not screwed. The Germans had a plan, and that plan involved doing a gigantic fake up north, sending several troops, mind you, just not the best ones and not the bulk of them, up north, up towards that Belgium area, so the French would be like, see, I knew they were coming this way, these idiots. And then blowing through the Ardennes Forest. And this is where you start to hear about that blitzkrieg strategy. Everybody talks about it now. Everyone knows about the blitz in football, and everybody's heard the word blitzkrieg, and blitzkrieg means this, and blitzkrieg means that. Here's what blitzkrieg essentially means. One, there are actual objectives to it. It's more than just some defensive coordinator in football screaming and slobbering at his linebacker to go hit the quarterback. A blitzkrieg essentially wants to get into a nation and seize its communications, and seize its supply. It has two main objectives. And picture this. Picture we were invaded by Mexico tomorrow. You don't know exactly what's going on, do you? I mean, are you on the border? Are you flying overhead with some kind of radar plane? No, you're not. What would you do? You would turn on the news. Now imagine on the news, as you turn it on, is some Mexican general saying, we control your country now. Seizing communications. You see what I mean? And you're like, whoa, maybe that's a fake. Okay, look. Hey, we better stock up on Kraft Mac. Looks like the Mexicans are here. And you hop in your car and drive down to the grocery store, and the Mexicans have control of the parking lot. What would you think? You'd think the Mexicans have control of the country. That's, in essence, what the blitzkrieg is. And the part of it about really being blitzy is the Germans had this famous saying, and it sounds really cool, don't get me wrong, but it can bite you in the rear end, and did later for them, but it sounds cool. They didn't like the way we did combat a lot, and they kind of made fun of us, saying Americans feel with their fingers when they should smash with their fist. Which, look, even though you're rooting for America and not the dirty Germans, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool, right? Smash with the fist. Yeah, baby. It can get you in a pickle, but there's a reason you do some feeling with your fingers first. So you don't smash your fist into a cinder block. But really, this was the Blitzkrieg's masterpiece here. They tore through the Ardennes Forest. The French, because, well, let's be honest, remember touching that hot stove? The French didn't want to blow the bridges. The French, the people in charge of the French army, these were all people who were witnesses to the absolute carnage of World War I. And they didn't want to blow the bridges. They couldn't blow the bridges. And Germany tore across the bridges. They focused all their planes, all their crappy tanks, and they were crappy tanks, all in this one area. And they essentially blew the French off the map. only took about a month. And I know you have a million and one questions. Some I can answer, some I can't. Why didn't they turn around and try to attack down south? Understand this. When Germany blew through the Ardennes Forest, they didn't march right through to Paris, not immediately anyway, and they certainly could have turned around and counterattacked with all these great troops and tanks that are just sitting up there in Belgium. What are you doing? Turn around and go. Well, the French leader called Winston Churchill as soon as the Germans blew through the Ardennes Forest and told him, "We are defeated." Wait, what? You still have like your whole army. What do you mean you're defeated? One of the French generals fired a bullet into his mouth. Finally, it took a British general, Ironside, to essentially grab a French general by the front of his coat and say, "What are you doing? Turn around. We have to counterattack. What are you doing?" They finally attacked separately. And understand this. The French then went and fought valiantly, at least the troops on the ground. We're talking to the last man. You know that famous story of Dunkirk? Everybody knows that, right? Where the Brits were trying to escape after the fall of France, and they end up in Dunkirk, and the Germans are closing in, and the English have to send all these fishing boats across the channel to evacuate all their dudes. Everybody knows the Dunkirk story. Do you know why there even was an option for Britain to escape? It's because the French, the ones we laugh at, the white flag loser French, they were dying to the last man against the Germans. But they had no leadership. The leadership that they did have, they didn't have any will left. They couldn't bear the thought. In the wave of it, in the face of an onslaught like that, they couldn't even stand up and entertain another World War I. And what's the lesson from that? Hang on. About to save you some money and improve your life. I know that sounds a little bit extreme, but listen to me. You are a better you when you sleep, and you are a disaster when you don't sleep. How do I know that? Because that's my story. I know exactly what it's like. When I don't sleep, I'm not sharp on the radio. I can't form thoughts. I can't form sentences. Shoot, I'm mean. I'm short-tempered with people, and I don't want to be that guy. As soon as I'm done being that guy, I think to myself, I got to get some more sleep. And that's why I'm so happy I found Ebb Sleep. It's not drugs. You know how I feel about drugs. It's a drug-free solution that targets your sleeplessness, those thoughts that cause your sleeplessness. Go to tryebb.com. That's tryebb.com/Jesse. Use the code Jesse at checkout. You actually get $25 off your order. tryebb.com/Jesse, promo code Jesse. Go get an Ebb Sleep today. France didn't lay down in World War II. The French troops were there, the equipment was there. France knew it was coming. France, by every account, by every metric, should have blown Germany off the map, especially France and Britain combined. It was a, frankly, we don't talk about it because it was victorious. It was an idiotic military decision by Hitler. But they did it. They pulled it off. And now, because we look at everything the way we look at it, we look at the French as a bunch of surrender monkeys. Those weak French. No. What France was rotten at the top. The French troops were great, as, let's be honest, as they have been for centuries. The French troops were valiant. French troops were amazing. The French were led by people I'm actually not going to be insulting to them. You could call them, you know, cowards or weak or anything like that. It's not that. The truth is, France was led by men who'd been destroyed on the inside by World War I. That's all there is to it. The country itself. It couldn't bear to hurt any more landmarks in France. It couldn't bear the thought of going on the aggressive. France should have attacked Germany after Germany invaded Poland. By all accounts, they should have attacked Germany. They probably would have stormed right in. Did you know when Germany was beating the crap out of Poland that they had almost nobody behind in between them and France? France could have taken that sweet army and just marched on to Berlin. Game over, war over. France couldn't bear the thought of another World War I. And that isn't explained by just the one-month Battle of France. When you have that kind of institutional rot at the top, you want to do things like explain it away, like we've always done. Oh, the weak. That takes time. It takes experiences, plural, over and over and over again to rot out your general staff like that, to rot out your leadership like that. You see, I've been absolutely slammed by your emails the past few days. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. I've been slammed by these emails of, Jesse, how did we let this happen? Jesse, what did we do? I mean, we got another 3 million unemployed today. That takes us to 36 million. As you know, I'm not going to beat you up over it now. That real number is well over 50 million. That these lockdowns, people, I can't put it nicely for you. It's the most disastrous decision in the history of the United States of America. There's a reason no nation has ever done it. Businesses can and will adjust to recessions. They'll adjust to pandemics. Even during the Spanish flu, when the factories opened and people were too scared, about half the people would actually show up to work. The other half were scared. Okay, they marched on. They adjusted. Businesses can adjust to pandemics and recessions and wars. When you've told a business, close your doors, you've given them no option. Why are we seeing employment losses, job losses like we have never seen before? Don't even come close to making the comparison to the Great Depression. This is so much worse than anything we saw in the Great Depression. It's not even close. Because even during the Great Depression, during the Spanish flu, during the Great Recession, no government pointed a finger at its own citizens and said, go home, stop producing. Because you can't. It's just not an option. It is never an option. It's the movies where the bad guy has an evil lair and the good guys are finally breaking in and he reaches over and presses the self-destruct button to make sure he blows everybody up. That's what locking down your economy is. You never hit that button unless you're walking out the door. You never hit that button. And I've had all these people ask me, how could we do this? How could we let ourselves do this? Jesse, how could Congress do this? How could this mayor? How could Trump? How could the governors? How could the American people stand for this? The answer is, this took time to get the American people, to get the American politicians conditioned to do something like this. There isn't an easy explanation I can give you of, oh, it's because of this, period. This is years, decades of Americans forgetting what it means to be free? Through our education system? Through our own negligence? Through the media? Whatever you want to call it. Americans forgetting what it is to be free? Americans losing any concept of spending, of what the dollar actually means, of debt, of deficits? People scream about it, but let's be honest. You and I, the human mind can't comprehend what a trillion dollars is. It's a number so big you quite literally cannot comprehend it. They just passed a $2 trillion bill. The money's already vanished like a fart in the wind. And hardly anybody's even yelling about it. $2 trillion. At any other point in the history of the United States of America, they'd be marching on the Capitol with pitchforks if you passed a $2 trillion bill of any kind. And now we're so weak, unaware. We're so out of touch with the reality of life. We're so out of touch with the reality of the hardships of life. Let's be honest. Do you want to know what happens in a nation that financially collapses? Do you know how bad that is? It's oftentimes, not sometimes, it is oftentimes with a complete financial collapse, it is the end of that nation. The end of that nation. They'll just flat out break up. That's if you're lucky. If you're not lucky, somebody will come in and conquer you. That's the history of the world. And for a lot of reasons, for a long time, we lost that. You ask me, what's the answer? Why did we agree to this? Why did the politicians do it? Why did the American people bow down for it? People. It's a long, long list of reasons. The truth is, it happened when we forgot about who we are. Lockdown this, lockdown that. What? We're Americans. Go screw yourself. You're not locking me down. I'll go open my business. Come try to make me close it. We forgot who we were. And it's taken a long time. You don't forget in a day. It takes a long, long time to get there. But here we are, man. Here we are. Hopefully there are people out there who will come save us.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint and your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own 3 of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get 2. Be like me and get 3. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.